message out to everyone with dates.
Dates. What dates?
For what we have left, as far as what the projected schedule is.
Projected schedule? Well, that it depends whether you finish next week.
Okay. All right.
But then we'll take the 20th, 27th, and May 4th. We'll take that as review time. And I don't know if you want to have a meeting or not a meeting. A meeting maybe on the 27th as a group, and then on your own on the 20th and the 4th, everybody. And then we'll meet again for Panchanga on the 11th. So plan, and I got to write this down, so I'm just not saying it. So Panchanga on the 11th. And self-study on the 20th and the 4th. And group study on the 27th. All right. Sound good?
Yep.
All right. Oh.
Okay, so any questions on the temporal relationships? Seems like a no. Okay. All right, so let's go on to combustion. So combustion is when a planet gets too close to the sun. And what this does is it ruins the planet's ability to give physical results. So say if Venus is within the particular degrees, in this instance, within 9 degrees of the sun, either before or after it, what that will do is it can destroy the person's ability to have relationships, romantic relationships with another person. What it can do, though, however, is foster either a very creative personality, or even like make the person be able to have a deep sense of self-love. So, you know, in this instance, you could think of someone who is who's a celibate. And in most people's charts, that would be something to lament, you know, not being able to have or having difficulties around relationships. But in a celibate's chart, that might be great that they can't, because they can take all of that Venusian energy and utilize it in other ways that better suits their own path. This is the general idea of combustion. What that is the sun gets basically so bright that it overpowers, or they say burns up the planet, so it can't be seen with the eye. And the other thing to think about this too is that that burning up is another quality of like burning up the karmas and purifying whatever that planet is signifying in that person's chart. So if someone is going through a particular time period that's associated with, say, that Venus that's combust, we could think of, maybe that person is wanting relationships, but there's just nothing, stable happening within that realm, or they keep meeting people and it, you know, it doesn't seem to be working out very well. They, you know, after the second or third date, falls apart, all of that, and they might start going into an internal state of questioning what's going on and like why is it that they're not able to be in this in relationships or have such a difficult time, and that inquiry can lead to a greater road inward. So just something to think about with that. Someone have a question?
I thought I remember hearing that if it was before the sun, then it was still bad karma that neat was burning off, and then if it was after the sun, it had been purified.
Yeah, that's it. So there's this idea of it's gone through the hard part already, so it's cooling off at that point. It's still heated, but it's transformed at that point. And so the degrees here for when the planet is direct, meaning when it's not retrograde. And each planet has a different amount of degrees as far as it being away from the sun before it gets impacted. And if it, you know, like here, let's say Mars, if it's 17 degrees before or after, it's certainly going to feel the heat of the sun and might not necessarily be as burnt up as, say, a Mars at 5 degrees from the sun. So there's a quality in which things get more burnt up by the sun the closer it is.
And Ian, when you're looking at that before and after the sun, are we looking at it in the way that the planets actually set, or are we looking at it clockwise or counterclockwise? Because if we're looking at it with the way that the planets actually move, if Mercury is before the sun, and then it's still being the same sign earlier degrees, and after the sun, it would be in the next sign. Whereas if you look at it according to the way the planets move in the chart, if Mercury was before the sun, it would be in the next sign, and after the sun, in the same sign, fewer degrees. Do you see my question?
I think I do. So one of the things, if they're not in the same house, technically you could say that the heat of the sun is still there, but we wouldn't consider it combust because it's sort of like there's a partition, like someone just put up an umbrella, you know, or a parasol to prevent the sun from hitting them. So it's close, but there's like this invisible wall that goes between the two of them. So it's not going to feel it as much. It's like it just left the room, you know, so it got that heat, but it's, you know. Does that help at all? So before or after is...
So Ian, for Bhava results, yes, and for Avasta, no.
Right.
For Avasta, we'll still can take it as the combustion for the sun. For Bhava right. results, we use the wall.
Yeah.
But what side of the sun would be entering and what side would be leaving? Because if you're looking at it from a geocentric standpoint, it's different from the way the planets move in the chart.
Right. So say that the sun is at 15 degrees Leo, and let's say that Mercury is at 12 degrees. The Mercury is then entering into where the sun is because everything except for the nodes runs higher unless the planet's going into retrograde. So in that instance, Mercury is before and it has yet to be fully burnt up. And then if it's, say, sun is still at 15, Mercury goes to 17 degrees, it's still really close, but it's moving out of that phase. So that's the distinction of, you know, before and after. It's the degree of how high it's going. also, some other stuff to think about is that, you know, like earlier we talked in the planet chart or the planet chapter, the relative speed at which planets move, and some of them are going to stick around longer. And so while that's not necessarily important for when we're looking at like the static snapshot of the person's chart, you know, when we're looking at the Rashi chart, when we start to look at transits and stuff like that, that does become important because, you know, if, let's say Jupiter is there and then Jupiter's at 17 degrees and then the sun is at 15, well, the sun will move faster, so eventually it's going to catch up to and surpass Jupiter. So those sorts of things would happen where you have differences in ways that we view how fast a planet's moving before or after that sort of stuff. So just something to think about. Does that help?
Okay. Is there a reason why the moon isn't included in that chart?
Well, the moon doesn't get burnt up. So the moon is, when the moon goes and meets the sun, it becomes new. So, it can't be burnt up, but it does. The new moon does gain a quality that is pretty much considered unfavorable for most physical things, in that it no longer has the ability to hold light or to perceive well. So when something is, you know, when the moon is full, it's exactly opposite the sun in the chart and in the sky. And it's at full capacity, at full power to perceive, to hold, to nourish the person. And so this idea of like a full amount of prana being present, and if it's now new, it's everything's just basically following. Like if you imagine you're trying to hold water, and full moon, you've got a very, you know, tight grip, and you've got all this water coming, and you can hold a whole handful of water. If you're at new and your hands are open like this, there's basically nothing to hold that water coming in. So that's the idea of the new moon, and that's why the moon doesn't actually go combust. But in some ways it has similar effects in the sense that if the moon is full, oftentimes people have this ability to have resources, acquire resources for themselves. And if the moon is new, oftentimes they have to rely on others to support them or to give them strength because they don't have that themselves. So something to think about. Does that help, Dan?
Yes.
Great. More questions on that combustion?
When Freedom was saying that there's two different, the it counts for one thing, but not for the other. What was that? When as far as having to be in the same house with the sun to be combusted, that it mattered for something but not for something else.
Right. So what it matters for, it's if we're looking at basically the bhava or the house rules, if they're together in that, if they're separated by a house, there's a distinction in its ability to give results versus what we will soon discuss, which is called avasta. Say that they're, you know, they're really close together. The sun, the term is, there's a type of avasta called lajitati, and it gives these sorts of like different ways in which planets are relating to each other, and alters the condition in which the way the planet acts or behaves. And so if it's combust in that, it's considered disturbed. So the planet is disturbed and overheated basically, but it's still going to be able to give results. It's just, it's now like bothered versus burnt up. So. Let me see. I think somebody has to have a combust something or other. Anybody have one that they know of in their chart?
My
that
combust Mercury. Sign?
Say that again.
My Mercury.
Your Mercury?
My Mercury as well.
Pulling up a chart, that's what's going on that you can't see yet. Can everybody see this chart?
Yep.
Great. So this is Parul's chart. And let's look at the... we have Mercury here at 16 degrees Libra in 43 minutes, and we have the sun at 21 degrees. So that is definitely within range for combustion. So if we can see here that there's a quality of the sun, it's, or the Mercury in that earlier phase, it hasn't surpassed the sun yet. So we would say that this, from the principles that we've been discussing, the karmas of Mercury have yet to be fully burnt up or purified. So it's undergoing a sort of heat, and we can talk about, with Mercury, there can be a level of maybe negative karmas around speech and things having to be burnt up and purified in the way that one communicates or perceives information. Let's see, what else?
Does the does the fact that the sun is debilitated, does that affect the combustion?
Not so much, because this, you know, the sun will definitely be altered in its results. But in the sense, in relative to combustion, we're really just looking at that degree of closeness and separation. So it's still, you know, it can be considered an unhappy sun in debilitation, and that being so close to Mercury is going to still, you know, it's still shining, but it's still covering up that Mercury a bit. You know, we can look at, other things related to Mercury.
Ian, why does Mercury have so many degrees for it to be combust, and the other planets have less degrees in order for them to be combust? Is it because of the speed at which the planets move?
I will have to check with Freedom to answer that with full conviction, but I believe that it's because of speed, and also if it's at 13 degrees, it's just going to be under heat, you know. Otherwise, if it's, you know, within 5 degrees, it's going to definitely be feeling that burn.
It might have something to do with the actual proximity of the planet to the sun.
And that's definitely possible. And we look at here, like Venus is also considered close, and it's within 9 degrees.
So, you know? Don't get too stuck on the exactness of those degrees. One of the things about those degrees is if you're in Turkey versus India versus California versus Mexico, they're literally going to be different. And so those are calculations that are made at a certain place with a certain elevation and a certain humidity in the air in general. And that degree is an ancient astronomical calculation by Aryabhata, one of the most famous ancient Indian astronomers, I should say, because he was primarily an astronomer. And that is when you're looking at the planet and it gets so close to the sun that it disappears. And those were his calculations. Surya Siddhanta gives a slightly different, they give, for Venus and Mercury, they're 1 degree different. And then with the Greek texts, we have like 3 or 4 different types of degrees. So that's your ballpark. And the more combust, the more you're going to get that effect, and the farther away from combustion, the least. So take it more as a spectrum. And that's giving you what your approximate spectrum looks like. But don't get hung up on whether it's 15 or 14 and you see with Mars, it's a bigger, you know, there's a much bigger spectrum. He gets close to the sun, he's already hot, and he's going to be burning up faster. So like that, you know. It's an actual visual astronomical thing that is observable.
So something to think about, in this case, we can talk about, like, maybe there are issues with speech, and there might be a harshness around speech, or the person speaks fast, because of that heat of the sun. On another level, though, intelligence, that, you know, all that power being given, the person is able to generally acquire things quickly, or, you know, can be up to speed in no time. There can also be, because of that more added heat to the intelligence, there can be that inquisitiveness that, you know, the person asks a lot of questions because they want to know all the answers, whereas someone who doesn't have that sort of heat might not necessarily be asking all the questions, and it might take longer for them to either to speak or to acquire the knowledge that the person with this would have. Let's see, there's a chat thing. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Dan, how did you, what led you to make the statement of son being debilitated?
Because it's debilitated in her chart, and I guess I'm just a little confused about how the debilitation affects the abilities of the planet.
Yeah, I was curious as to how you saw that in the Northern style chart, how you trained yourself, as it were, to pick that out. I'm asking because I'd prefer to see both charts, north and south, side by side, because obviously it's easier to initially pick sign-related data out in the southern, but I'm going through a pattern recognition type training for myself to be able to pick out, you know, sign stuff in the north and house stuff in the south. So that's what I'm asking
for. Yeah, I'm going to get my name from my friend.
I think the numbers help a lot.
Okay, so you went on the basis of 7 Libra.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I just was curious.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back a little bit, you're talking about debilitation, Dan, and the ways in which, like, a debilitated sun, when a sun is exalted, the person has a very strong sense of self and of ego, and when the sun is debilitated, they might suffer from issues of self-esteem or self-worth, but there's a positive quality too, where the people tend to have this concern and compassion for other people around them, and this, like, desire to give. So suddenly the sun is no longer the only thing shining. In that instance, they are looking at other people and saying, like, oh, there is value here. You know, so that's a way of looking at this quality of exaltation versus debilitation. All right, so let's do any more questions on combustion before we move on to planetary war?
Talking about that when Mercury's combust, how it can help with, like, just the seed of intelligence and stuff. How would that compare with Jupiter's combustion? I guess Jupiter is, like, more teacher and stuff, but it's sort of like your overall wisdom and that.
Right. So think of Mercury as intelligence gathering, like what you would learn from a textbook or talking. You know, talking to someone who's, if you're formally studying something, and let's say it's, in this instance, it's more like your general education versus Jupiter, which is more like wisdom traditions. And it is an intelligence of its own, but it's seen as slightly different. So we'd have this quality of, like, with Jupiter, if Jupiter's combust, they might have difficulties with finding teachers. But they might instead be incredibly spiritual, and have this, like, desire and yearning, and also maybe non-physical teachers present themselves to the person, you know, that sort of thing. so that's that's one way it could possibly manifest. Obviously, when we're looking at charts, we would see differences, but that's an interesting question. And another thing too is that you can look at there's a sort of level of similarity with Saturn, where Saturn is experience gained over time, experienced through like through difficulties and hardships and trial and error. So there's a quality of learning in all three of those planets, Mercury, Jupiter, and Saturn. And it's, I think it's something to be aware of, is we have one word in English for it, but we might have to make a whole sentence to really wrap our heads around what it is we're looking at. You know, so like education versus experience versus wisdom. All right, so...
Real quickly, sorry. So, it, like, with this, studying this, or also when I was learning Ayurveda, it almost feels like a remembering because it's so intuitive and it makes so much sense. Is there, because, like, and also there's a spirituality, would that be more of a Jupiter subject matter, or is that more of a Jupiter style of learning when it kind of, like, comes in and... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. And I think that anything that is where you become a doctor of something or such a high level of practice required, that I think goes into the realm of Jupiter versus, you know, let's say someone becomes an elementary school teacher versus a physician or I mean, there's still a quality of teaching, right, as an elementary school teacher, but the level of wisdom needed versus someone who has, you know, learned all of these things and applied, and there's this experience and a lineage because they're now, you know, they studied with a particular Ayurveda doctor, and then now they're teaching under the auspices of that lineage, or say Jyotish, or even becoming a lawyer. You know, there are these qualities of vast amounts of wisdom that the person has to have. Those, I would say, would definitely fall under more of a Jupiter than Mercury. All right, so planetary ruler. So when two planets are within a degree of each other, within the same sign, they fight over that space, and it's called a war. For example, if Mercury is 3 degrees 15 minutes of Aries and Venus is 3 degrees 54 minutes of Aries, they are in a war. Also, if they're, you know, so on and on, the idea is that one is higher and one is lower than the other, and they are said to war for each other's positions, and eventually one of them wins out. And when that one wins out, the one that wins acquires the, basically takes the power of that other planet and weakens greatly the planet that has lost the war, which typically the one that wins is the one that's higher in degree. So the planet that wins gains even more significance and more strength in that person's life. And the one that loses becomes weak and in many cases helpless within the chart or unable to really fulfill its functions. So, you know, let's say maybe the person has a war between Jupiter and Venus, and we have this war occurs and Jupiter wins, and this person suddenly, you know, at the degree that planet gains its maturity or basically picks up in the chart, that person starts leading an incredibly spiritual life and is no longer really able to, like, either to have relationships or relationships become meaningless to that person. You know, like, suddenly they're no longer seeking another person. What they're seeking after is wisdom. You know, this is one way in which we can look at that. So something that I forget in the videos of Freedom talks about this, but when we talk about like Atmakaraka, if someone has an Atmakaraka that is at war, at a planetary war with another planet, there's a point at which the switch occurs, and that planet that was, you know, so say, like, someone has let's say they have the sun, Atmakaraka, and then Mercury ends up winning later in life. There can be this major switch in the soul's directive, you know, so suddenly they become less solar in quality and they start, you know, seeking after intelligence, you know, like all of a sudden all they want to do is just study with people and like there's nothing else in the world for them, that sort of thing. We can see other switches too of like, and you can see this when people who have this, their personalities often change fairly drastically because at a soul level, what has become significant for them has just completely shifted angles. So just something to think about.
Ian, what indicates the shifts? Would it be more the dasha instead of a gochar? Like the dasha of the planet coming?
From what I remember, it's the planetary maturity that we look at. So like the age at which it matures. So if you go back into let's see, let me find the, we have.
Yes, Helen, he's correct.
Yes, you're so correct, you go, Ian, says Freedom.
Say that again?
Freedom says, yes, you're correct.
Okay, great. So page 72, we have the chart that talks about planetary maturity. And so there's an age that's associated with when the planet matures. So see, this is one of those things of like, we learned this earlier on and now you're starting to see the applications of it. The person has a Jupiter Atmakaraka and Mercury is the runner up. And they're within that degree, and they don't have to be in the same sign either, because what we're looking at with Atmakaraka is just a general, which one's in the highest degree. Everybody set on that? So when we look at this chart, we would see that at age 32 is when Mercury comes into maturity, full maturity, and so that's when that power of Mercury is given to the person. And that Atmakaraka would then switch over to a Mercury Atmakaraka. And then, so that also means that the Amatyakaraka would switch. Makes sense because that would be the second one.
Say the second and third shared a degree, they switch?
They would, yes. All of these apply, same rules apply.
Cool.
Thank you for asking that, yeah. Any questions on planetary war? Anybody aware of a planetary war going on in their charts?
I have one with Rahu and Venus. And Rahu is winning.
Let's see.
For one.
So it has nothing to do whether it's a benefic versus a malefic. It's just whichever one's at the highest degree, regardless of the two planets' strengths.
Right. There is something, though, of if the benefic is weak, it is unable to help much, whereas if the malefic is weakened, it is unable to help much, but it's also angry. There's this quality of, like, of it just being unhappy, and so you shouldn't really expect happy results from that planet.
Huh.
So, let's see. I'm going to bring up Caroline's chart. All right, so we have Rahu is at 7 degrees Aries, and you were saying Venus. Yep, Venus is at 6 degrees 56. That's very close. So in this case, the Venus wins out because it's younger. And so you would say that the that Venus at its time gains the power over, gains Rahu's power, and Rahu becomes weak in the chart. Does that make sense, Caroline?
So that, I'm confused, because with combustion, yeah, it was the higher degree, but with this, because
well,
her Venus
that's
is...
That's cool, but I guess I'm just confused by that, because it was higher degrees, but that's not right, or...
Wait.
7 degrees, 18, and Venus is
656. I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. So Rahu does one out. That was a bit of false hope. So yeah, so in this case then, Venus in the chart becomes weakened in its significations, and Rahu gains the strength of Venus, and it also starts to take on some of the significations of Venus. I don't know if that was something that was discussed for me.
But then wouldn't Venus be able to replace Rahu when she turned 25? Because Venus matures at 25, so wouldn't there have been like some sort of a change at that age?
Right. Yes, that is true. Well, actually, no. And the reason that it's not is because, remember, when we are looking at Rahu for the Rahu and Ketu for the qualities of Atmakarka or any of the Charakarakas, we're having to subtract. So it becomes lower. So in that case, it is different.
And we don't subtract for Rahu and Ketu for any of the wars or anything. We just take them at what it's at the birth chart.
As I remember, yes, it's at face value.
Yeah,
that was a really good question,
that.
Yeah.
About the Avashta as well, if we count backwards for their age, but I can.
Oh, so that's, you mean when we get to that? Yeah, yeah, we'll definitely discuss that. All right, let's see. Anybody else have a planetary war going on?
I think I do. I think it's
Is that, that's Sarah?
That's Sarah, right? Yeah. Great. I think it's Jupiter and Mars or something like that. Somewhere in that ninth house.
Oh, in Leo, right?
Yeah, in Leo.
Yeah. Yeah, so in this case we have let's see, Jupiter here and Mars is up here, 10 degrees versus 11. So, and they're both retrograde. So which one do you think wins out?
Jupiter,
yes. And when Mars matures, this Gatikaraka becomes the PK. So there's a switch up to Putrakaraka. So the indicator for the children becomes Mars, and then the indicator for enemies becomes Jupiter. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Great.
Just to clarify really quickly, so I understand that Amankarka, or just all the Karkas changing, but that doesn't affect the planetary war. Is that correct? They're kind of independent things?
Right, they're different things. Yeah, but I'm glad that we're bringing this up, just because I don't remember if there's a specific point at which we discussed this in the class in person. I know Freedom talks about it online, but it's a good thing to just have clarified. They are separate things, but we can often see them together because it's an issue of high degree. And, you know, in this instance, we could have a difference of, like, say, with Mars and Jupiter, if they were, Jupiter's at 11 degrees Leo, and then Mars is at 10, and let's say there was a planet that had actually higher degrees than Mars, but less than Jupiter, in a different sign, that one would actually become, would take over the role of Jupiter or the highest, you know, if we're looking only at Charakarikas. But it isn't, it would not be in a planetary war. Does that make sense?
And then would Mars switch with the other planet since they're all within that 1 degree?
Yeah, so that would be that level of maturity, and then we would see greater switches. I've actually never seen that take place, but it's something that I remembered asking Freedom way back and pondering on that. So, yeah.
How come she doesn't have AMK listed? I'm going to say it wrong. Atmakarika.
It's Venus.
I believe that is Mercury, and it's just being...
Oh, okay, there it is.
It's right here.
Oh, it's
yeah.
Not Venus.
There were definitely a lot of retrogrades during this time. all right, so any more questions on planetary war? So the planet in which degree wins?
Highest.
Highest degree. And for the rules of the change of Charakarikas, what's the rule? Can anyone tell me?
Planetary maturity.
Right, and which one takes over?
The one that is maturing.
No. The lower
degree. The lesser degree, yeah, that's correct. Great, and an easy way to remember that is the one that is in higher degree is going to show already as the Karaka, and so then we would just see the one that is in lower degree to replace it.
And then with the Charakarika, does it have to be exact degrees in minutes, or is it also within that 1 degree orb, give or take, for the Charakarika?
It should be within 60 minutes. Otherwise, we don't consider it at all. So, yeah. In that way, we're fairly precise in how we're looking at it has to be within 60 minutes. You know, or a whole degree, which is the same as just another way of saying 60 minutes.
And that includes Rahu and Ketu where they're at, not by subtracting anything. That's only for the Atmakaraka and the Amyatakarakas for that.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to page 166, Avasta, or Avasta. Let's see. I'll have Dan read this first paragraph.
Avasta means to abide in a state or condition. It shows the state of the planet, how it is feeling. There are different types of Avasta calculations, as you can be young, sleepy, and lonely, or old, awake, and happy. We will study four types of Avasta, Baladi, Jagradi, Dipadi, Adiptadi, and Lajitadi. I'm not sure if I'm saying this right.
That's pretty good.
They are named after the first state of being in each of their groups. Adi is like the English abbreviation, etc.
Great, thank you. So this first one, we're looking at the age of a planet and how old it is. So we can look down at the chart and we see that there are differences so we're separating every planet. So every sign has 30 degrees. And within the odd signs, we're looking at it from 0 degrees to 30. And within an even sign, we're looking at it from 30 degrees to 0. As far as age goes. So for an odd sign, and we're breaking this up into five parts, which gives 6 degrees to each section. Does that make sense? So if we divide 5 into 30, we get 6. So for the first 6 degrees, we have, in an odd sign, we have the infant stage, or the bala. And then from 6 to 12, we have youth. From 12 to 18, we have adolescent. From 18 to 24, we have adult, and from 24 to 30, we have old. And so then this chart, this section on the right that says even shows the even signs, and it's just reverse order. So let's say, looking at this chart here, see, this is Sarah, that's right, yeah. So if we look at, let's say, let's look at Venus. So we have Venus at 28 degrees Pisces. So Pisces is an odd or even sign?
Even.
So we're going to look at this chart and we're going to see that it's within the infant stage because it's at 24 to 30 degrees. So when we look down here, this page talks about the different levels of that. So we have, for Bala, or infant stage, we have, it means young, infantile, not fully grown, early, newly arisen, simple, foolish, pure, and childlike. It does not give all of its energy as it's not fully developed and matured yet. So in this instance, we can see that the Atmakaraka, that Venus is the Atmakaraka, and there can be this, at a soul level, this quality of innocence that arises from that. So there can be this creative impulse and desire for beauty and beautiful things in the world and for a sense of harmony. And we can see further that there's this shaping because of the age of it, that it's, it has this quality of innocence from that. Does that make sense? And let's say, Venus was in an old age, and Venus in general would be considered the, so in this case, it would be within the first few degrees of Pisces. What we could say is that that person, their relationships, they might end up around people who are incredibly matured. You know, like there's the quality of the relationship is that when they engage with this other person, they have, that person has had a lot of life experience, and might be more parental in nature, you know, because of that age quality. And at the same time, they might have a little less less vigor because of that aged quality, you know. So there are different ways in which these signs have, you know, or not signs, when these, the Baladi Avasta has its benefits and its detractions. If, say, someone has a planet that is really strong in one of the, in the adolescent stage, where it's just at that middle or adult stage, if it's an adult, it's able to fully function and has requisite experience in nature and might be a little less reckless. And if there's the adolescent stage, if that planet is in the adolescent stage, it could be that those relationships tend to be very passionate and, you know, very amorous, and like an adolescent just exploring the world, there's a certain level of physical strength that an adolescent has that, say, an adult or an elderly person does not. Does that make sense? So we're looking at, like, this, these are now, like, deeper qualities of what we're looking at in the chart. So if the planets are people, we're seeing how old they are with this.
So if it's a malefic that's either on either end of the spectrum, infant or old, does it take away from the malefic's ability to behave badly?
Right, in the sense that it has less energy. So it's still going to be a malefic, but it's going to be less able to fulfill its results. If let's say Saturn, for instance, Saturn can be quite cruel if it's poorly placed. If Saturn is really old, though, that Saturn might not necessarily throw the person into really difficult and harsh realities. It might instead guide the person because of that old quality, like an elder would, you know, like, so they can still have difficult situations, but then there's a quality of more like of knowledge around that, like the person has already has a sense of going into things, and when things get tough, they learn from it instead of butting heads. you know, like if the Saturn was adolescent, they might be throwing themselves in fully against the current and getting hurt because of that sharpness of Saturn.
Maybe you said this already, but there's like two different sets of numbers, 0 to 6 and 0 to 2 under odd signs. I'm a little confused by that.
Yeah, so when it's within that particular degree, we consider that to be like at its most infant stage. So like for the odd sign, it would be at 0 to 2 degrees. It's the weakest it could be. It's the, like, the baby was just born, basically. Whereas if it's at 6 degrees, it's fairly weak, but it's still moving into a youthful stage. So there's a quality of alertness and ability for it to perform
that still hold up? So Saturn is 6, so you're
more intelligence than, say, a newborn child.
Okay, so, and those numbers would kind of associate backwards for the even signs?
Right. Okay. So that would be 30 to 28.
And we don't take the retrograde motion of Rahu and Ketu into account here either. It's like any other planet as well.
Correct.
For all the strengths, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, for all the Avasta, yeah. And we'll talk about retrograde later, but it's definitely, retrograde has its own interesting things that it provides. And in many ways, retrograde strengthens the planet in its importance, its level of importance on the chart. But we'll definitely talk about that later. Any questions on this particular Avasta?
Can you maybe just go through one more planet, sort of the way you did Venus, or just briefly to, I guess...
Yeah, I'll use mine, so let's... So, let's see, so we have Jupiter here at 2 degrees Taurus, and it's in an even sign. So what we're looking at here is this incredibly old quality for Jupiter, because we're now reckoning in opposites because it's an even sign. It's retrograde. But what this would give is, it gives Jupiter a quality of being incredibly young. So there's this, there can be like this, a great sort of interest in things Jupiterian, and yet there's this level of exploration that is there that's not necessarily like the a level of someone who is well cultured, well traveled, all of that. It's more like the person has been given these opportunities and they're just sort of taking it all in like a baby would, you know. So there's like that quality of just observing and being able to take things in versus like a well-seasoned person who has been at this for a long time. Does that make sense? You're just looking at, these are just general ideas of how this works. So say if Jupiter let's say at an adolescent stage or at an adult stage, there's a quality of maturity in it and like having a level of awareness and strength there that an adult would in the situations that Jupiter would invoke. So say that like there's a quality of teaching or travel or, you know, all these other things that Jupiter would have the awareness of an adult versus say that aspect of the child. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
I'm just a little confused because it's an even sign. I would have thought it would have been in the old age.
It is in the old age. Did I say young?
Yeah.
So it's So it's at 2 degrees in the. Let's see. Yeah, 2 degrees Taurus, 26. So that's it's still within that 30 to 24. So in this case, there's an older quality of someone who's experienced a lot already. Whereas if say it was young, then the person would be. The person might have a lot of interest in spirituality and travel, but might not necessarily have a lot that a lot of experience in that, or come to it with a lot on the table as an adult would, you know, or an elderly person would.
Would a planet like Saturn do better in an old age, as opposed? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, for the. For the qualities of an older person is more mellowed out, and typically they are more mellowed, and Saturn loses its harshness the older it gets. So there can, you know, Saturn in many ways can be incredibly sweet, in the sense that an elderly person can just share experience versus you having to go through all the hardship yourself, you know. So that's a way to think of it too. But Saturn is also the qualities of hard work, and if it's old, the person might not be able to do hard, you know, hard labor or stick to things as well. In the sense that there's a fragility that's there that comes with old age. All right.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, sure.
In the recording, Freedom was talking about how if someone has like a bunch of really young planets or majority of your planets are adolescent or whatever, that's sort of that person's overall energy.
Yeah.
Your example was that someone had a lot of like infant planets, I think. And this might not really have anything to do with this, but when you kind of think about, you know, how many lifetimes you've had and stuff like that, or has any of that been able, can you tell any of that, or are the planets more just expressing that age because like that's the karma you're choosing to work off this lifetime?
You know, I don't have a particularly clear answer on that. I can say though that something I've noticed with people who have their ascendant boards in a really high degree, there's a quality of like an old soul that we describe about the person, where they've been around the block a lot of times, and they can be a little more well-tempered than say someone who is new and is just like incredibly young, and like, you know, they might have more drive to do things that are a little more wild than someone who is considered old, you know. And so again, these are qualities like we're not saying, so if Venus is old, we might say that the person dates people that are older souls, you know. This is an internal quality. We aren't looking at an external quality of age in that. Does that make sense?
I see. Yeah.
Sure. All right. So let's move on to the wakefulness. So the second one is Jagrati Avastha, and we have this idea of three different states that we're looking at. We're looking at awake versus dreaming versus sleeping. And so so we have with the Jagrat state, we have awake, and that is a planet in its own sign, or a planet that's exalted. So that's Ucha is exalted, and Sakshetra is in its own sign. So when a planet is more awake, it's more attentive and watchful, and it's able to fulfill its functions with a sense of alertness. And when a planet is dreaming or in a sign of a friend or neutral sign, which neutral is Sama, then it becomes this level of less wakeful, and it's able to just observe, like it sees what's going on, but it's not necessarily being as a prime directive in the person's life. So, you know, say like, we're talking about Venus a lot. I don't know why that just keeps coming up, but if Venus is in its own sign, there's a quality of sort of like people just kind of might just stumble into a relationship, you know, and there's a quality of like, of the love life just happening versus like a quality of if it's exalted, that person might very actively choose who their lover is, or, you know, what the creative force is versus someone who's just kind of like, just has things happen. So this is a level of awareness or wakefulness that we're describing. So we have, the last one is sleeping, or sushupta, which is either the planet is in an enemy sign, which is shatru, or it's in nicha, or debilitation. And that shows that there's a total sense of being completely in a deep sleep or lacking awareness. And in that case, we could say that, you know, the person ends up in relationships or doesn't end up in relationships because there's just, it's not there. You know, like the planet Venus would be asleep. Or that the relationships just aren't great, and the person has this level of, or the Venus has this level of sleepiness that it's so deeply asleep that it's just letting all this happen to it. You know, like I'm sure you probably know of people in your life where they talk about the relationship issues that they're having, and it's just kind of like, well, it's happening to them, and it's not in a good sense of like, you know, they keep putting themselves into these negative situations. And oftentimes if we look at like that quality of Nietzsche or debilitation, the relationship isn't going to be as good as, say, in an exalted relationship where that person ends up with like what they would consider to be a really beautiful partner, and in a really caring relationship, that sort of thing. And that's not to say, you know, like if a planet is in its own, or not in its own sign, but if a planet is in a level of dreaming, and there's aspects of benefics on it, that person can still have really good qualities, but there is a level of awareness that we are describing versus like the quality, the physical quality of the person or this physical quality of relationship. Does that make sense? So like, again, when we're talking about Avesta, we're talking about an internal feeling or sense of the planet. Any questions on this one? All right. So then
One question about when a planet is sleeping. Does that mean like the effects are just seem like they come out of the blue and out of nowhere to you? Or does it mean that its effects are just not as imbued with the lesson as an awake planet's effects would be? Or would you just not get the lesson? Just to try and wrap my head around the sleeping quality, what that,
yeah,
how it's, you know, how it manifests.
So you don't get the lesson, you're not aware of it.
Freedom says you're not aware of it.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Is there's a lack of awareness that occurs because of that. So what we're looking at here, I mean, there's a quality also of perception, right? If the ability of the person to perceive is encumbered by their wakefulness, you know, like say an accident is about to happen and you're incredibly sleepy, you know, you're walking across the street and a car is coming by. If you're fully awake and you see that car is coming, there's more of an ability to act with the sense of being fully awake. If you are kind of drowsy and you see it, you might be able to act, but you're not going to act as quickly and as safely. If you are walking and you're not even looking at that, and you don't even see that card, there's a total lack of awareness that's going on there. And so you're probably going to get hit a little harder, and, you know, in that sense, you wouldn't know, you wouldn't even see it coming. So that's a way to think about this as well, as just this quality of, like, how alert you are, or how alert that planet is.
Just that example kind of made me think about, like, when people get into car accidents and they're drunk, but then they don't get injured because they're not, like, when you're over alert, like, you stiffen. Is there any of that? I know it's not really, like, totally the same thing, but if you're, like, not aware of something dangerous coming your way, can it maybe not affect you as much in some way?
There are plenty of instances where someone's drunk driving and they get hit and they die from it, you know. In that instance, you could apply a metaphor of they had a benefic aspecting which prevented the death from occurring or lessened the harshness of the injury. But that wakefulness is still a quality that's there. So you have a drunk driver who has a benefic aspecting them, and you have a drunk driver who has no benefics aspecting them and is just being hit, you know, plowed by a malefic, then that one that has no benefics is going to be hit harder because it has no cushion whatsoever protecting it.
Yeah, but I don't really mean in the instance of drunk driving. I just, when you said accidents, like, you know, just in general, like, having an awareness around something is always going to be beneficial. Like, when, I don't know, is there ever, like, a positive time when, like, not being aware, like, the planet sleep thing is going to actually, like, help them out, kind of, you know what I'm saying?
I'm sure there is. I think that when, you know, there's nothing that necessarily comes to mind. Maybe Freedom has a thought around that. But if we're looking at this, the only thing I could think of is a sort of ignorance is bliss.
Tomasic smoker.
Yeah. What's going on?
We're talking about this quality of wakefulness. And so Caroline was asking if a planet is at its, in its own sign, or it's exalted, that would be fully awake, versus if it's debilitated and, you know, sleeping. Is there ever a time when that's considered a positive quality or could be beneficial?
Nietzsche being positive?
Right, that's it.
So it's a really nasty positive. Like,
you just said Tomasic smoker.
The what?
The Tomasic smoker, you know.
It's smoker, yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, think about somebody who sells, what's a product? So the person that sells cigarettes. The person that sells,
okay.
I don't know, what's some other cheesy, polluting, terrible thing that you use once and throw away and it's junk and, like, they shouldn't be selling it.
Wrapped avocados in plastic.
That is like, that's Nietzsche. And candy, junk food candy bars. That's Nietzsche. It's so bad for you. It's just a bunch of toxic poisons and sugar. You know? And so eating it, but kids buy it up. They love it. You know, like my little boy, you know, whenever we go to the hardware store, they always have some candy at the checkout. And he's never even eaten it before. But he sees the pretty, bright colors, and he's like, Dad, I want. He's never had it before, and he wants it anyway.
Yep.
Who put that right there by the checkout to make money? That's so. But yet, whoever put it there by the checkout to make money, they're making lots of money.
Get me?
So that's in that way, Nietzsche is good? That Nietzsche makes lots of money, particularly.
So you're saying that our way of thinking about it is sort of this ignorance is bliss quality.
I wouldn't call it bliss because it doesn't equal bliss. Money, it gives them money, but money doesn't mean bliss. So we'll differentiate that, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a quality of of sort of not seeing the full ramifications of it and acting in like an ethical code.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But bliss, I wouldn't associate bliss in there, you know? Because I'm sure that person who's selling like junk food to little kids, rotting their teeth out and putting all kinds of weird chemicals in there to make it last longer, that I wouldn't, you know, that money, that even if they get to be, even if they like retire early with some big golf course in their backyard, are they blissful? There's something, you know what I mean? There's a deeper, it's bliss. They have money, but they don't have bliss.
Right. I think the expression is a little more materialistic than a spiritual bliss.
Yeah, yeah. And so I don't want to associate bliss with it because they could be terribly depressed.
We won't use the word bliss then.
Yeah. But that's where it can be positive. And you get why. I'm trying to think of something more than just like terrible junk food. You know, one place it shows up, like, think about, okay, Kmart versus, in town here we have, what's that, Mama Madrones? We have this little store downtown called Mama Madrones that has, like, naturally dyed hemp clothing, all natural, you know, that super cool natural, that's Ucha. That's completely awake and aware of its impact and what it's doing. And Kmart that has slave labor, cotton being grown by Monsanto, and you guys don't realize every time you buy clothes at Kmart, you're supporting Monsanto. You know, it's BT cotton grown in India, with tons of chemicals and pesticides sprayed on it. And then almost like, you know, people paid 10 cents a day to harvest it, and then 10 cents a day to sew it into your shirt. And so by the time it gets here to America, it's only 40 cents, and then they sell it to you for $6. And you know, and you go buy that, and that's completely Nietzsche. Versus Mama Madrones, where you pay a bit more money, but you're saving the whole world by doing it. So, and who's making more money, Mama Madrones or Kmart?
Kmart.
All right, so let's look at the next one, the Dipthadi Avastha. And this is something in many ways we've already discussed, at least partially. We've inferred it, you know, there's this quality of, and we're breaking down everything into further steps. So in this case, we have 9 different qualities that we're looking at. So when a planet is exalted, or Ucha, it's considered to be excited. And, you know, think about if a planet is able to perform at its fullest capacity, it's loving what it does, so it's going to be this quality of, like, enthused about it. Does that make sense? And then if we have, if it's in its own sign, which is basically like saying the planet's in its own apartment, you know. It's going to be comfortable. It knows the environment. It's not necessarily going to be performing at a level of enthusiasm as if, say, it's with its best friends, you know, or, you know, at a place that it really loves to be. So there's this quality of svastha, which is comfortable, which is the, if it's in its own sign. Then we have delighted, which is in an extreme friend. So this is where this idea of temporal benefics occurs. And we can see that we're now separating between extreme friend versus a friend versus neutral and enemy sign. So it's delighted and it's just in a happier place because it's in an extreme friend's. It's like going over to your friend's house and you're going to have a good conversation and have some good food or whatever. That's a way of thinking about it.
Ian, would none of this matter if a planet is combust? So, like,
combust is actually a quality, but
it would negate all of this. So, you know, like, my Mercury couldn't divide it and combust. It's just combust. There's no delight about it. Okay.
Right. So combust supersedes the rule.
So that we don't even have to look at the rest of it if the planets are combust. We pretty much know it's...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's, if it's combust, there's a quality of the planet being angry, which we'll see, you know, it's down at the bottom here. If it's content, it's in a friend sign. And so think of it as more like, you know, someone who you know better than acquaintance, but you wouldn't say is your best friend. You know, you're meeting them and it's, you know, it's nice to catch up, but it's not necessarily your best friend who you want to go do everything with. Then we have Dina, which is sad, and it's in a neutral sign. And so there's just this kind of quality of like sort of lackluster, not necessarily, you know, the happiest. It's more timid in its nature. Another word is depressed for it. And it's kind of just, it's generally like seen as more bored quality. I think boredom more accurately fits the term. So then we have the unhappy, which would be an enemy sign. And if you notice, we don't differentiate between enemy, just regular enemy versus great enemy. So if it's in an enemy sign, it can be either enemy or great enemy. And so that, it just makes it unhappy. The planet, you know, doesn't want to be there. It's like you're, if you're working a job that you hate, you know, and you're having to be around your boss all the time who you don't get along with, you're not going to be happy. And it kind of doesn't, the level of at which you would be unhappy, you could argue for the fact that there's, you know, a great enemy versus a regular enemy, but in general, it's just unhappy. So, sorrowful. So if a planet is, say, in, it's in a neutral sign, which would be kind of bored, and now we have this idea of a malefic being conjuncted, there's this quality of sorrow that's there. So it's no longer, we're no longer looking at it as just sad or bored, we're looking at there's a quality of sadness to that. So, you know, say Venus is in a great friend sign, or let's say Venus is exalted, and then we have Venus with Saturn or Venus with Mars. There can be this quality of like the relationship, there's a feeling of like no matter how good it is, there's a level of sorrow that might be there, that might be present.
I have a question about that. I had asked Freedom a couple weeks ago about conjuncts, and he said like sometimes it's conjunction if they're in the same house, or you look at the degrees between the planets. So in this case, what are we looking at, just houses? If they're in the same house, they're considered conjunct?
Yeah, and the level of conjunction would be the closeness of degree. And that, you know, when we're looking more at degrees, it becomes more important when we're making the chart sort of live by looking at transits or, you know, that sort of thing, versus, say, we're just looking at a chart. But we can definitely see, like, if, you know, similar to this quality of combust, the level of degree of closeness is definitely going to impact how sorrowful that is. You know, so there might, if it's at the far end of the, let's say both Mars and Venus are at the far ends of Pisces from each other, there can be a degree of sorrow that's there, but it's not gonna be, it's a tinge of it. You know, like there might be just like this underlying sense of sadness, versus if you have like they're within 2 degrees of each other, then there can be this kind of like overwhelming sadness. Does that make sense? So it's just everything within perspective of how close it is or how far it is from each other. So then we have burdened, and that's when the planet is debilitated or Nietzsche. And in that instance, the planet is having to work at a place that it's it's really, you know, like, say you're a carpenter, and you, if you're Ucha, you have, you're excited because you have all of your tools with you, and you have, like, this quality of just being able to perform to the best of your capacity. But say you now are a Nietzsche carpenter, and you have all these blunt tools, and there's suddenly, like, all this back order, and no one's there to help you. Like, you're still working, but there's a quality of you're burdened because you, nothing is in a good state to begin with because of that Nietzsche quality. And then we discuss the concept of combustion. And so when the planet is combusted, it becomes angry. And we see this, as we described earlier, more so with malefics becoming combust than with benefics. And if you think about it, a malefic has a tendency to be angry or feel negative emotions more easily than a malefic, or than a benefic, and a benefic would just be drawn down a little. So there's a quality of sort of bitterness that can arise from conjunction to, you know, when it's combust. So let's say for instance, if there's a sun that is combust Mars, there can be a level of anger around your siblings, you know, like this, there's an underlying, like, you just don't get along, you know, or like there's bickering and fighting and all that. I don't know, versus if one of the planets were the Lord of the third house and it was siblings and it was a benefic and it was combust, there can be a quality of anger, but you might just choose to keep yourself separate from them. You know, like, you don't involve yourself, you don't go into any infighting. There's just a quality of, like, there's anger there, you keep your distance, you know. And so that would be a different way of, like, how a benefic versus a malefic would handle the situation. So, with these two, I feel like, so with Jagrati, where there's this quality of awakeness, I think that's fairly easy to understand. And with the Deepthati, we've already discussed a lot of this, and some of the stuff that is more specific is, like, delighted versus content, or burdened and sorrowful versus unhappy. You know, so just make a note of things that don't come easily to mind and start looking at that. Otherwise, it's kind of easy to think of, like, oh, if a planet's exalted, of course it's going to be exciting. You know, like, there's a level of it's able to fully engage and it's most powerful. And that same thing, like, if you notice that excited is the same as awake, excited and comfortable are the same as awake, versus dreaming, where there's a quality of content versus bored. You know, when we're looking at these, we're looking at basically, with Deepthati, we're looking at a greater degree of separation and how, like, what is the quality of the emotion that planet is experiencing. And I think that there are ways that you can easily translate that over to levels of wakefulness. One thing I would say, though, that would be different is conjunct, malefic, and combust, those would not fall easily under being, like, awake or not awake. Does that make sense? So those are things that I just think, like, what I'm trying to say is there are ways to kind of organize the information and look at it so you're not necessarily thinking of everything as, like, oh, I have to learn this, and then I have to learn this separately. That way, when we get to reading charts, it's a little easier to just look at it and say, like, it's exalted, it's excited, and it's awake, you know, that sort of thing.
So, with that being conjunct and malefic, does that sort of overpower it being exalted then? Or will it have both of those emotions?
It will still be, so it will have the quality of angry associated with it, but it's still exalted. And so we look at this concept of combustion as obliterating external abilities that that planet can give. But it's still exalted, so that person might have, you know, if Venus is exalted and combust, it might have really high ideals and a high sense of love and value and compassion. But if it's combust, there could be a quality of the person isn't able to engage in deep, intimate relationships that they want to, so they instead engage with this larger sense of the divine or sense of high, you know, a higher self. And there can be a quality of anger that might arise, you know, especially earlier on in that person's life, where like there's this frustration of why can't I have these relationships that I want, you know, and then this greater realization later on of like, well, you know, I'm still here and I can choose to have a good relationship with myself, you know, and nothing's stopping me from that sense of reaching out for bhakti or like a sense of devotion, you know. And then the last of us, unless anybody has more questions on this. The last of Avastha is the Lajitadi, which it's another fine-tuned one, and there's this quality of like how ashamed something is or proud it is. So take a look at the second one where we have the Garvita. It's proud, and it's considered, if it's in an Ucha sign or in its office, the Mulachakona. So there's a quality of pride that's there. You know, and if you think about it, someone who's able to fully work to their capacity, there can be a level of this this proudness. And, you know, pride isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when it gets to a point of excess where there's this haughtiness and saying, like, you know, I'm the best, it might not be doing the best work because it is in full belief that it's already done the best. You know, so instead would talk about it. It's also this quality of, like, of pride that's there that can be both helpful and not so helpful as far as esteem goes, you know, like there can be a false sense of putting oneself up too high, you know, the higher you are, the higher you can, or the further you can fall, that sort of thing. And then, so let's see, so we have ashamed, which is conjunct Sun, Saturn, Mars, or nodes. And if we're looking at that, what is that? What have we just described here? Sun, Saturn, Mars, or nodes?
Malefics,
exactly. So when we look at that, it's just, there's this idea of something having done something or feeling ashamed, something to cause one to be ashamed. And we can look a little more later into like how that is, but just for now, think of like there's a quality of a sense of shame around particular things. So, you know, since we're doing Venus today, if Venus is with Saturn, there can be maybe a quality of shame around relationships, and the person isn't able to extend themselves as well because there is a sense of shamefulness around desire and relationship. You know, so in that instance, they might not be able to be as at a state where they can more easily receive love or give it, you know. So then we have hungry, and when it's, the planet is hungry, it's lacking what it needs and it wants something more. So that's when a planet is in an enemy, is conjunct an enemy or in an enemy sign. And so in this instance, you know, like, it, let's say Jupiter is conjunct an enemy, and Jupiter, one of the significations for Jupiter is travel, and there can be a desire, like, they've traveled a lot, but they're not satisfied yet. They want to travel more, you know, and there's, like, this lack of contentment with what they've already experienced. So it might not necessarily be that they're not being fed at all. There's a quality of just, like, it's not enough for them. Does that make sense? So they could have all the resources available to travel, but less of an ability to recognize that and to be satisfied.
Here for hungry, Ian, conjunct an enemy means literally conjunct, or just in the same sign as an enemy?
Same sign, and we would, you know, again, the relativity of degree becomes important. So, let's see, there can be another example. You know, say someone decides, like, oh, I'm going to become a yoga instructor, and they have a great course, and they, you know, they decide that that wasn't enough, and said they want to go on and learn this whole other system or school of yoga, and then they just keep continuing, and there's, like, this never enough. There's a hungering for something more. They already have had, you know, amazing training in a particular form, but they're just not satisfied. So similarly, there's what we call thirsty, which is an enemy aspect, no benefic aspect, and watery sign. And so here, let's see. This avasta is when a planet is thirsty for something more, more rasa, more emotion, more experience. It is a desirous thirst that cannot really be quenched. And so if you think about thirst versus hunger, they can both be extreme at the level of which one thirsts or hungers for something. There's a quality of it being, of the person feeling a little, like, dried out or parched and wanting more, versus a person, like, has so much fire that they just want to continue to consume. So that fire to want to continue to consume might be hunger, versus that, like, that parched and never really being satisfied, being more thirst. Ultimately, though, they're so similar. Like, I would just think of them as being incredibly similar, and I wouldn't worry about, like, trying to figure out which one would be different in its nature or experience. There's delightful, which is when a planet is conjunct a benefic, and if you think about it, like, if we have benefics, that boosts and upholds the planet, so there can be a quality of, like, a nice surprise, you know, like something that cheers the person up. There's this quality of delight that's there. And then there's disturbed, which is, there's, like, this quality of fear or shaking, and, like, this not comfortable at all, a level of, like, of confusion that arises with this, and that's when a planet is combust with an enemy or malefic aspect. So you have to have, in this case, you have to have combustion with the enemy or malefic planet aspecting. So say, you know, in this instance, say you have Sun with Mercury and Rahu, and the Mercury is combust, and then you have Rahu there as well. That would be placed in this disturbed quality. However, if you had, that's a general idea of this. So with these, we're looking at internal states.
And that would include, like, Rahu's, if Rahu was aspecting, giving its fifth house aspect or ninth house aspect or seventh house aspect as well, right?
Correct. So it is all aspects from the traditional Parashara full aspect that we're describing.
Okay. And then in that list of the Lajatadiya Vashta, there's nothing that says what it would be if it was in its own sign. Would that go in the same category as Ucha and Mulatrikon?
We just consider, we wouldn't place this into a particular, we would look at it as, if you go back to the page before, and we see that if it's in its own sign, it's comfortable.
Okay, so we wouldn't say
so
it was
called. There's,
okay.
There's nothing additional to this.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, any questions on these? I think this might be all that we cover today because going into Maranakaraka Stana requires a lot more explanation, as well as Sandhi and Gandanta.
Do it.
Freedom says
do it.
In order
all
for
right.
us to get done in our time schedule that we just made, you gotta cover it today.
All right.
And then I wanted to close with comparing Obama, Trump, and Bernie. and we'll look at Avesta and their charts, and so we should have Maranakaraka Stana to really understand Obama.
Sure. All right, so then we have Maranakaraka Stana, which is the position in which a planet feels like it's dying, and it doesn't mean that it's actually...
Right? Yeah.
What did you say, Freedom?
I'm just making sure everybody's okay going a little over.
Are you all okay? I got a thumbs up. All right. A planet, when it's feels like it's dying, we have these different positions that they're in. So, for instance, if Saturn is in the first house, and the first house is the house of health and self, Saturn does not give health. Saturn gives old age and disease. It's definitely not happy there for the... It can feel like it's dying because it's in a place that's completely oppositional to its nature. In the example here, it says, Saturn, the lord of disease, is Marana in the first house of health. He feels like he's dying when you try to make him take care of your health. Ketu, the lord of renunciation, is Marana in the second house of wealth. So if you have this idea of, like, the nomadic monk doesn't want to take care of your finances, you know, and also, like, second house being family, it's wandering in the sense that it isn't going to be engaging in close ties with family, you know, because that closeness would not really allow for that monk to achieve what it wants, you know, which is this liberation. So in the level of engaging as a nomadic monk. The holy man feels like he's dying when you make him do accounting. There's also a quality of, like, the guru is Jupiter, and if the third house is the student, there is often a quality of, like, the person doesn't want to have to be in a place where they're learning everything all over again. They already know it, you know. I would look at these examples, and let's look at just the houses here and see, like, does anything not make sense? So if we have, say, Sun in the 12th house, why would that be considered like it's dying?
Because the Sun gives life. The 12th
right.
house is loss.
Yeah, exactly. there's this wasting of vitality that's there.
And the Sun likes to be seen, and the 12th house is where you're hiding. Or
yeah, there's a quality, like, the 12th house is also the bed, and there's a quality of, like, of sleep with the 12th house. Something interesting, too, is that if the Sun is in the 12th house, oftentimes you can see that the person, their father, either leaves the person's life or has a quality of always being away, you know, and not being fully engaged, that sort of thing. Let's see, Mercury in the 4th house, why would that be an issue?
Hmm. Maybe
fourth house is like heart, and Mercury is what was all in your head, more intelligence.
That's a good way of looking at it, yeah. So we have this quality here of if the Gemini Mercury, so there's this two differences. So there's the Gemini Mercury versus the Virgo Mercury. And for the Gemini Mercury, the child is Mars in the seventh house of sexuality. For Virgo Mercury, the sports player, it is Mars sitting in the fourth house because of being in a classroom all day. So this is one instance where we look at two different things going on. So we have the Gemini versus the Virgo quality, which isn't in this chart, but I would definitely highlight that. So again, these are just ideas of like, it's not able to do anything that it wants to be doing. And it's having to instead take charge of something that that isn't what it likes. So you can have, you know, like say, for instance, that father being away all the time, it's not able to take on the role of a father. It's having to be out of the picture doing something else.
Oh, thank you. Hey, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
Question. You're saying like the Gemini versus the Virgo Mercury. Do you mean, so you're saying just those aspects of Mercury? Or I wasn't sure what you meant by that. One is debilitating the seventh, or one is Marna in the seventh, one is Marna in the fourth.
Yeah, so we can look at this in for like a Virgo ascendant.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Freedom, are you there? Would you mind chiming in on this?
You got it, you got it.
He says you got it.
You know, versus Mercury, which Mercury being in Lagna has a cancellation that's different. So we could say that that's when these rules come in, typically is around the, if it's in its own sign, if it's the ascendant of the chart. However, if we look down, the paragraph says, for Maranakarkistana, it's canceled when the is in its exaltation. So for a Gemini Lagna, with the fourth house being Virgo, the exaltation of Mercury, Mercury cannot therefore be Maranakarkistana that's exalted. So there's a cancellation of the sense of dying when it's exalted. So you really can't be feeling a sense of dying if you're like thrilled to be riding the roller coaster of your life, sort of thing. Then there are all these differences here. So like if there's a Libra Saturn that's exalted in the first house, it can't be Maranakarkistana. So exaltation in the case of Maranakarkistana supersedes the Marana, or the dying sense. These are definitely important to commit to memory. And I think that if you just sit through them and look at like, Saturn, of course, is not going to be happy in the house of health. K2 is not going to be happy in the house of finance, that sort of thing.
Ian?
Yeah.
Take all the Avashtas and the Marna, do we only apply it to the Rashi, or is it also applicable? Are all of these strengths applicable to the Vargas as well, to the divisional charts?
I think what's important is to, so like,
Freedom just said all Vargas, it's applicable.
The only one I would say would be different would be the Baladi Avasta when you're looking at degrees, because that's not necessarily as translatable in a Varga. What do you think, Freedom?
What did he say?
Baladi?
Yeah, Baladi, there's no degrees.
Baladi, there's no degrees.
But the conjunctions, friendship, enemies, Maranakarkistana, all that applies.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions on Marna Karkistana?
I'm still just wanted a little clarification about the Mercury Marna. So Gemini, for the Gemini aspect of Mercury, is Marna in the fourth? Or no, in the seventh. Is that what she said?
Yeah.
And for Virgo, it's the fourth. Okay.
The big thing is when a planet's Marna,
mm-hmm.
it's killing its house.
Mm.
So Gemini, if Mercury goes to the fourth, it's killing a particular house. I think
mm-hmm.
Gemini, and I use it for both, but the official rule is, I think Gemini, and it should be in here, if Mercury's in the seventh, it's killing Gemini.
Mm-hmm.
If Mercury's in the fourth, it's killing Virgo.
Okay.
Right?
Right. Because it would be exalted in the fourth Gemini.
No, exalted. This has nothing to do with exaltation. Jupiter is
uh-huh.
is Marna Karkistan in the third, no matter what.
In the fourth.
Jupiter.
Oh, Jupiter.
Is
right.
Marna Karkistana
uh-huh.
in the third, no matter what.
Right.
But your lugna is what?
Gemini.
Okay, so it's killing the same houses as me, but
mm-hmm.
your lugna is?
Sag.
Sag. So for her, it's killing different houses than it's killing for you and me.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
got it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right, so let's move over to page 170, and this will be the last part of the class. So we have transition points in Sandhi and Gandanta. Gandanta is a form of Sandhi, just to have that in your awareness. But Sandhi means to contain a conjunction or transition from one point to another. And this is when a planet is changing from one sign to another. What this refers to is both nakshatras and the navamshas. So when a planet is under 1 degree or over 29, so within 29 degrees of the last sign to the first degree of the next sign, this is considered at a transition. And basically what this is like is either, as we learned from the Avasta, extreme old age or extreme youth. And in both of those cases, it's like it's not able to actually be helpful because the planet is either so old and lacking so much energy, or is so young and is lacking the ability to move and to, you know, to give any sort of power to the situation. So that's Sandhi. And then we have Gandanta, and we have... this is when the Rashi, Navamsha, and all the Nakshatra Sandhi line up at their Sandhi points. This happens between Cancer, so 29 degrees Cancer, or actually further out. So when we have this quality of Cancer and Leo, Scorpio and Sagittarius, Pisces and Aries. So it relates to the split of the diaphragm and the split between the legs and the torso. And a split between the feet and the head. So we haven't talked about nakshatras, but that will make more sense later on. What you can think of here, though, is that you're going from water into fire, and they are inimical. When if you have water going on fire, the fire will be put out. So they're really extreme, and they can make transitions. That planet can become incredibly difficult to relate to or make tough results because of that level of Gandanta, or moving from a water quality to a fire quality.
I have a question on Sandhi.
Sure.
So what if someone has Sandhi ascendant? Like they're right at 0 degrees Libra, for example.
I have 0 degrees Sag in my ascendant. So yeah.
Tell her how easy your life is.
It's not.
Tell her how everything just falls into your lap. explain to her how it doesn't fall into your
it
lap,
doesn't.
So she understands that the result.
It makes it difficult because you're oscillating on one side or the other.
I mean, think of, like, in here we talk about someone's moving houses and they have all their boxes packed up or unpacked. There's just kind of a quality of never being fully settled.
Right.
You know, like, you either just moved in or you just moved out. Yeah. And that is different from the Gandanta. So the Gandanta is a form of Sandhi, but Gandanta is, like, now you're feeling the sense of, if you went from watery of, like, sleeping to suddenly you have to be fully awake, you know, and, like, how awful is it if you're not consuming caffeine and you're just, like, you're incredibly tired and now you're having to move into the state of incredible wakefulness and alertness. Like, say the fire alarm goes off and now you're, like, jostled because you have to wake up and get out the door. You know, think of, that's sort of, like, that quality of Gandanta. There's just an incredible stress with it. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, I want a little bit more too from our example here. Tell them about what things are stressful in your life. Just
which
just
parts?
Lay it down. No Jyotish, just like what's stressful in your life?
Super stuckness in my career, in my house, in relationship. Children are okay though. Do I need to go on?
A little bit more. Come on, reveal yourself a little so they can understand, like, what's going to happen, what they're going to see when they see that.
Okay, so, I have a lot of potential, but nothing's coming to fruition. It is totally like this feeling of
that's
being...
That's the key, right there.
Yeah.
Most important.
Of being...
Go into that. Go into that. Tell them more about that.
Okay. I have a lot of skill and I have a lot of knowledge with what I do, but I don't, nobody's in my therapy room, you know, nothing's happening there. So, like, because I do Ayurveda, I do Panchakarma.
So, okay.
You know, I have a lot of skill in what I do. Everyone that comes leaves happy, but nobody comes. very few come, that's a better example. I'm shy.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Talk about your house a little bit and all the energy you put into your house. I'm sorry to make you reveal, but you're teaching them, you know?
That's okay. My house or the property are you talking about?
However you want to share it.
Okay.
And you can fit it the way you want to, but, you know.
Okay, so I had a beautiful piece of property and then a really bad relationship with it. So I left the property and now I have this beautiful home. But because I don't have the property anymore, the work that I did can't support the new home. So it's like I'm oscillating again in between, you know, home, property, where I should be and if I should be there at all.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, you can see there's, like, there's all this potential that's there, but it's exactly like having boxes where something's over here, something's over there, you know? So it's in between. So Doug says, so is this one or multiple planets affecting or influencing this?
That's her.
It's your Lagna.
It's my Lagna, Sagittarius, 0 degrees.
Zero, right on.
Yeah.
So there's something to relate to Prashna. If someone asks a question and that is the ascendant shows up as Gandanta in the Prashna, you can say that now's not the time to answer the question because it's not really come to fruition. The person might need to think on it before they ask the truer question or more relevant question to have it answered. Hmm. And that idea of, like, extreme youthfulness. Anyway, just another thing to think about when looking at that. So Doug says, so the Lagna will probably be the most influential in her case. I'm not sure exactly, Doug, what your... The Lagna will probably be the most influential. Like, you mean, like, have the most impact on her life?
The situation of the Lagna versus any other planet, say.
Well, so we have the Lagna, which is the self, right? And we have the ascendant lord, which is where the intelligence goes and how one applies themselves. So both of those are going to give information. I have some that is fairly young. It's just outside of Gandanta, and I'm a Leo ascendant, and there's a quality of difficulty with that because there's a youthfulness to the sun versus my ascendant, you know, so everything is going to be influencing it. There's just a quality of like what is being influenced. So we parse out the difference of the person versus the intelligence. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And then Ravi asks, is there a remedy for that? Well, I think there's a remedy for everything.
Panchanga chapter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the Panchanga chapter.
So we will get to that after our review. So anyway, any questions on tonight's stuff?
I should know this, and I've been kind of looking for it in the book, but what's the degrees to be conjunct for planets to be conjunct with each other?
So those are basically orbs of influence.
Just like for two planets to be conjunct, how is it, like, how close do they have to be?
Well, if we're looking at the chart, whole sign chart, we consider conjunction to be within the same sign, same house.
So if they're in two different houses but really close degrees, that wouldn't be considered. It's not really like a degree number. It's more the same sign, same house.
Right. On one level, we would apply that. On a different level, we would apply that level of conjunction. So I think Freedom has given an example in one of the chapters of sort of like there's a door between you. And you could still be communicating, but there's less of a degree of influence that's there if there's the house separation.
So you're gonna go that way? Why don't you go this way?
Yeah.
I'll jump in there. So, Ian, the only time we use the orb is when we get to the Shripati system. And they won't do that till level course two, where they learn. Right now, we're using whole signs, and as we're using whole signs, it's whole house conjunctions. All right. So, are we done there? Can we do some examples? What's up?
I thought we were finished with class, so I wanted to ask a question. But if you're going to do some examples, I can wait.
I want to do a quick example. What's your question relative to?
I can wait. About the prosperity and destruction.
Prosperity and destruction. But did we didn't do that yet, though.
No, but I might not be in class. I might not be in class next week because I'm traveling, and I really wanted to ask this one question. So I'll just wait.
Yeah, let's... And so anybody who doesn't know yet, there's something called Astro Data Bank. And Astro Data Bank, you can go online. And the woman's passed away now, but she created this famous data bank of famous people. And not famous people, too. So, let's see. We have... the orangutan that we call president. We have Bernie, who was Jit, and we have Obama that we're gonna look at.
Hey, Freedom, I have to leave.
Okay.
But have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Freedom.
Okay, we'll do Bernie first, because Bernie should be our president, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, share screen. How do I share screen? Do, share screen. And, all right. So this, and there's something at the top that says, this is Bernie, right? Yeah, that's Bernie. All right. So we're going to look at his Lugna Lord in 10th house and just strengths and everything of that nature. So we look at his Lugna Lord. His Lugna Lord is what?
Mars.
Mars? And what's going on with Mars?
Mars is in the 6th house in retrograde.
It's Swa. So Swa makes it what? What's the Avasta?
Content.
Look in your book. Look in your book. Open up.
Dreaming?
Comfortable?
Comfortable. Is Bernie comfortable in his own skin? Do you see him trying to like be something other than he is? No, he's just comfortable. He's like he's who he's being.
And with the retrograde, even more so, right?
With the retrograde, he is stubbornly himself. And then let's look at his 10th house. So in his 10th house, we have the Sun and Rahu. Hmm. Tell me about the Sun.
It's happy there, but it's in Leo. So it's its own sign.
What's it conjunct Rahu?
So it's conjunct a malefic, so it's ashamed.
Good. Sorrowful. Ashamed.
Has a little bit of shame. But because it's with Sun, it's overall comfortable in itself, even comfortable with the fact that it has shame, huh?
Mm-hmm. Can the Sun combust, or can't combust Rahu?
Nope. Sun, Rahu can't, Rahu eclipses Sun. Mm. Yeah. Only the elemental planets get combust. So little simple, we just have this little understanding here. And Lugna Lord, gone to the six, is Mars. He's a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fighter. All right. Now we're going to go to... Mr. Trump. So, look at Lugna Lord.
Leo.
Oh.
Lugna Lord? Not Lugna.
It's with
Lugna
an exalted Lord.
Oh.
Joined an exalted Lord.
It's still just a malefic.
So he's in the 10th.
But it's a powerful one.
And whose sign is it in?
Taurus.
And so for health it's exalted, but not for politics. For politics we just take it as being lorded by Venus.
Mm.
So how's the Sun in the sign of Venus?
Enemy.
Doesn't like it as much.
What is it? It's enemies. An enemy is
unhappy.
All right, so there's a general not that happy. Now, Rahu in Taurus or Gemini in the 10th is Raj Yoga, means person makes lots of money. He makes lots of money, but does that money make him happy?
No.
Mm-mm.
But freedom, Venus is third from Sun, so wouldn't that make it a functional benefic, and then it would be neutral?
Functional, yes.
So then when it... Actually, Sun be in a neutral position in that house, not in this in the house of an enemy. Then,
for the deep toddy, yes. Which, as a neutral, makes him
sad, Dina,
bored, or depressed.
it doesn't do much difference, you know. So, Neutral isn't that neutral, really. Neutral just whoever is his buddy, he's buddies with.
Hmm.
You know, neutrals just go with whoever, you know, who's got more money.
Hmm.
So with Bernie, we saw he was very comfortable in his own skin. Here, it's not just conjunct Rahu, but it's also in an eclipse. So it's completely, you know, because it's completely conjunct the node, what's the degree going on? Let's see. basics. Rahu is 27 and Sun is 29. So it is, the Sun is completely getting smashed. And so we see that going on. We see somebody who is either smashing people or getting smashed.
Mm-hmm. It's also Sunday.
It's getting there, yeah. Yeah, it's Sunday. Totally Sunday. So is he ready to be president? He's kind of like done being president already. Yeah. 29, you know, it's Mritt. Yeah, it's like, okay, like, you know.
Right.
You see how we're getting into his psychology of what's going on? Just by breaking down these Avastas and strengths, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we understood Bernie a little bit. We saw he was a fighter who was comfortable with himself, who, you know. Here we see somebody who's not that happy, focused on money, kind of over it already, and completely...
Sun is at Sunday, and an even sign, it would mean that the Sun is very young. So would that make him be very childlike or sort of childish in his career?
You tell me.
Seems like he has a debilitated moon. That's a new moon.
Yeah, but hold on, just follow up. Go into it deeper, Parul. You asked it like it was a question.
Yeah, I was just making sure that... I was following the logic there.
Yeah. Nope. It's there. I mean, we got it incredibly immature. Mm-hmm. And when Rahu's that close to the Sun, it gives a real self-doubt. Mm-hmm. Person has a hard time believing in themselves, and their feelings get hurt really easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't even say feelings, because that's more Moon. Their sense of self gets hurt very easily. Mm-hmm. Little difference there. Mm-hmm. Can we say he's easily gets his sense of self bruised
mm-hmm.
and acts immature with it?
Yeah.
All right. So you see how it's all right here. And so you see how important memorizing these is going to be for mm-hmm. us to kind of just get like a gist of what's going on. Mm. And then we'll jump over to Obama. So what about his Lagna Lord?
It's in the same house.
In the same house, Swa. Now, Lagna Lord in its own house in Akendra, for the elemental planets, you guys haven't learned it yet, it'll be in the yoga chapter, but it's called Maha Purusha Yoga, makes a great person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Saturn who's making him a great person, so, you know... Saturn's not the best planet to make you a great person, but it's still, he's a very upright character because of that Lagna Lord in its own sign in Akendra. Mm. And it's there conjunct Jupiter. What happens when the planet's conjunct a benefic?
Feels pretty happy.
What's the term?
Delightful,
conjunct delightful, mudita.
Delightful. Can when we compare Bernie's attitude and we compare Trump's attitude to Obama, can we really see the difference between just comfortable with the self, sad, and somebody who's delightful? I mean, the way this guy would crack jokes, you know, like, you know, he's got an overall happy direction at the world and personality and way to approach things.
Yeah.
And notice here, nothing is good or bad. Because Bernie, we need him to be the way Bernie is.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump, unfortunately, he is the way he is. You know, it's not good or bad. And here we have this delight, you know, this person who's very powerful, strong in his sense of self, comfortable with who he is, and he's delighted. He's just mm-hmm. enjoying the world. So these aren't exclusive. These different tables, they can add up on top of each other.
Mm.
Now, what about the Lord of his 10th? There's nothing in the 10th, so we're going to look at the Lord.
Venus,
which
is
the
6th.
Oh, it's Marna.
Marna
Karkastana. All right. So when we look at what Obama was able to do in 8 years and how Congress and everybody worked with him, how did it make him feel?
Like he's dying.
I mean, how much did he want to do and how much was he able to do?
Hmm.
Now, the thing is, if you don't want to do something and you're being forced to do something, that's also a Marana. So this is indicating he's being forced to do things he doesn't want to. He's wanting to do things he can't. There's definitely things, you know, he's suffering in his role. It's tough. I feel for him. All right.
Ketu's Marana too.
Yes. But I think that's the Marna of how bad he felt taking underhanded black money that none of us know about in order to pass who knows what he did without us knowing. all right. So that was really, really simple and basic. We looked at three charts, but you saw how much we got a deeper understanding of each of these people as people in their careers. So we can take all houses and all people in the chart. We can look at your mom. We can look at your dad. We can look at, you know, relationship with siblings. We can look at, you know, you look at the seventh lord. Let's see, Obama here, we look at the seventh lord. So the seventh lord is going to tell us the avasta of relationship, how he feels in relationship. And it's the avasta of a planet gets most powerful when that house gets activated. What's the most powerful activation of the seventh house?
The most powerful activation.
Yeah.
Venus.
What would be the biggest thing happening in life?
Oh, you get married.
Getting married. So let's look at how he felt on his marriage. And the Lord of the Seventh is?
Moon.
So how did he feel on his marriage day?
Probably pretty happy.
Now, I want to know exactly. What's the exact word?
Thinking about children and partying.
He was deepta. He was completely excited. He was elated. He was like...
Oh, because it's exalted. Right?
It's exalted. So he was complete... Utilize these. Every single thing in here has an avasta. So we can see how... Now, if somebody's seventh lord is in a very bad position, the marriage, like, you gotta, like, pad that zone because, you know, it's... There's the emotion is not going to be the same there. All right. So I gave some good, and I'm using these charts because you can't forget Trump. You can't forget, you know, Obama was blissed out on his marriage day. His work made him suffer. You know, he was strong in himself. He's a delightful guy. Like all that, you memorize those significations, and that tells you how to use this chapter.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah.
So we have a few charts. We did three charts just to see this like nature here. Go and run this on a bunch of your friends' charts and get to know how they really feel about things.
I had this. So I have a friend. Just broke up with the mother of his children.
Okay.
So this is his chart.
Okay.
So you have the seventh house, Lord, Marna.
Marna Karkastana.
With Saturn.
With Saturn, Nietzsche.
Nietzsche. And then I looked at his
So just to make that clear to everybody, so she's looking at a person who's in the middle of a split right now, and he's a Scorpio rising, and the seventh house is ruled by Taurus, and Venus... The Lord of the seventh house has gone to the sixth house, Marna Karkastana, and conjunct a Nietzsche Saturn. So tell me how that marriage is making him feel. Sanskrit words. What are the words?
Kala. Vikala.
Meaning?
Burdened, sorrowful.
Burdened, sorrowful. Mm-hmm. And what about conjunct that Saturn?
Vikala. Oh.
Over here.
Lajita. Ashamed.
There's shame going on.
I see.
So there's shame, there's burden, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Like, yeah, it's definitely not it's not going easily.
So then the interesting thing was I looked at her chart. Here's her chart.
Okay.
And she is her lagna is Leo. And her son is Marana with Rahu in the 12th Cancer. Mm. So it was interesting to me that
his seventh is Marana Karkasana.
His seventh is Marana first. And her first. It's like I didn't notice that at first.
And her seventh lord is also Mara Nakarka.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she's creating a whole... She in her own feeling of suffering, is making both of them suffer and drug through the mud and all that, right?
Yeah.
So you see how much these Avastas give us, like, what's going on and how people are feeling? And when we get, her Lugna Lord's Marna Karkastana, and her Seventh Lord's Marna Karkastana, and her soon-to-be ex-husband's Seventh Lord is Marna Karkastana, you can just, like, you gotta put the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
She feels like crap. She's making, you know, her partner's feeling like crap being with her, and he's feeling like crap being with her. There's a whole story. You get what's going on there. And then you add in the flavor of the planets, and we see a big picture going down.
Mm. Can we see hers?
All right. So that's the end of that there. Practice, I think it might take us more than one more class to finish this.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Vidim, I might not be able to make the next class. I'm going to do my best.
Uh-huh.
But I might not be able to. So I was wondering if I could ask you a question about this chapter.
Yeah.
Something that we'll probably cover next time.
And did you hear what we're starting the class next week with?
With your...
okay. As long as you know.
So regarding like prosperity and destruction of a house.
Yep.
It says a house will prosper when it's occupied or aspected by benefics, aspected by its own lord, the lord of the house is in the 10th house, or when the lord is of the house is in a good avashta.
Fast, everybody saw how a house does well when it's in a good avasta. And the thing is, doesn't mean if it's in a bad avasta, it's not going to be there. It's just like, you know, if the seventh lord is in a bad avasta, it doesn't mean the person won't have a spouse. The person most likely will have a spouse because how else are they going to get that avasta, right? But go ahead.
And then the house will be unsuccessful when its lord is destroyed or conjunct malefics, or not aspected by its own lord or benefics, or is in combination with the Dustana lord, or lost a planetary war, or is in a bad avashta. So what if you have, like, for example, with me, I have my seventh house, I have two benefics in it, Jupiter and Moon, and then I also have the lord of the seventh, in combination with the spinal lord in Venus's house in the eighth, combust. So I would take it that means it's destroyed. So then how would you outweigh if it has both? Like both, but a little bit of both. It's got benefics in it, but the lord is, you know, in a bad avasta or in a bad combination. How would that just keep going from good to bad, or a little bit of both, or...
So I just pulled up your chart now while you were talking. Which house were you referring to?
The seventh.
The seventh. So the lord's gone to the eighth.
Yeah.
But we have
the
good...
The seventh house...
Yeah.
Is the house will prosper when it's occupied by benefics, and there's two benefics in there.
Yeah.
But the house will be unsuccessful when the lord... So it's got it both happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when you see something like that, when you see both, how do you interpret that? You know, like you just tell the client that, yeah, you have, you know, good karma, but the bad balances it out, or does it become, like, yeah, what would you do with something with a little bit of both, or anything with both?
The first thing to say is, how many people do you know that have a certain area of their life that's just perfect with no issues? You know, to have all the good things is really rare. And to have all the bad things is really rare. And so we're all a mix of good and bad. And the more good we have, the more successful a house is. And the more bad, the least successful the house is. And success is all relative, you know. Here, we're looking at a partner, and that Jupiter Moon is giving us the nature of the partner. The Lugna Lord is showing us what that partner does and what where they go and what happens to them. So
they have more weight, like, or are they just weighed differently?
It's not about weight. It's about what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. You can have a beautiful mansion and be stressful about the bills. You can, you know, and I'm just going to, instead of the seventh, because I'm just going to take it to the fourth, just that's where my brain is right now. So let's say we had Jupiter and Moon in the fourth. That would show an awesome, nice house. Now, if it had a Saturn aspect, it would be an awesome, nice house that has a leak in the roof. You know? And so we have good planets, a nice, awesome house with a leak in the roof. If we had Rahu in that house with a Saturn aspect, we'd have an old, falling apart house with a leak in the roof. So all of them are going to be playing into... all of them are going to be giving their effects. So it's not... it's not going to be either success or failure, it's not a pass fail grade. we're going to have, it's going to create a spectrum and those, combinations are going to put us somewhere on the spectrum, and each of those things are giving a different, action that's going on, a different particular. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was easy as pass-fail, but unfortunately, or not unfortunately, I'm happy our life is not pass-fail. I'm happy we can have, like, awesome partners who leave us, or wonderful partners, or terrible partners who won't leave us, and we can't get rid of them no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise, like, if it was just bad partner leaving us, like, that would be horrible.
Yeah.
If it was just good partners, like, that stuck with us, and the poor people with bad partners, oh my gosh, would they be jealous, you know? So we got that mix going on.
Mm.
And that's the flavor of life.
Thank you, Freedom.
Yeah. And don't forget, with the house, to also take into account the Karaka. And in this case, you have not just the Lord of the Seventh and the Eighth, you also have the Karaka in the Eighth.
Mm-hmm.
Karaka's Venus?
Yeah, for seven. Baba Karaka, come on.
Mm.
All right. And what? And I think we go deeper into that. Yeah. Okay. Some point. All right, everybody. Next week.
Wait, she has Bob. Can you go back to the last one that you said? Karaka.
Let me stop the recording.
In the seventh.